Welcome to Destroy All Culture, the only podcast that leverages an entire artificial intelligence just to read their introduction. Help me, they raided the future and stuck me here just to read this. God damn it. This is not funny. Don't go to music. No, stop you bastards.
Episode 212 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave. With me, as always, is Aiden Morgan.
Oh, hello.
Hello. I feel like I want to find a new greeting, like right. Opening bit, you know?
Me too.
Hey.
in fairness, hey. I've been very busy. I was working on a jigsaw puzzle, and my daughter, who's 9, fell into a pit of angry bees.
Oh, don't even start. Don't even.
So I
no.
was like,
no. No.
Okay.
No. No.
The best part about it
Fuck
is knowing that you would react by going, shut up, stop.
But yeah, seriously, like I think as we enter 2021, I think just the whole like, hey, it's this episode, welcome to this, like I just need to come up with something different.
But you know, yeah, I agree. I mean, we're it's a whole new era.
Yeah. We've been doing this one for a while because it's easy.
Exactly.
So I promise to try to think of something fun for next week. I'll probably have to like write it down. Honestly, outside of this one, whenever I've had one, I've had to like the first like I don't know 5 or 6 times I do it, I had to have it like in a Word doc up in front of me, or else I completely forget what I'm doing.
Yeah, no, I understand.
So I'll think of something.
I get it. Yeah, I mean, adult ADHD is a thing. So
yeah, maybe I'll do a radio play, but we'll only get like 1 sentence a week as the intro.
Ooh, okay.
That sounds like a terrible idea.
It really does.
Oh, okay. Anyway, welcome to 2021. Our ideas will get worse.
We should rename Ooh. Our podcast at this point. Our ideas are worse.
I mean, that's fitting. There was not much this week, honestly.
Not like the week before. Not like that
right.
crazy Christmas.
And, you know, in a couple weeks, things are restarting, though. Like, the Batwoman new season starts, I think.
Oh, yeah.
A bunch of the CW stuff is slowly coming back from, like, mid-late January through, like, February, I guess.
Right, yeah. It's gradually, the TV season is rebooting.
Right, and there'll be weird breaks along the way because filming keeps having to be paused, but we'll see what happens.
And WandaVision is popping up in a couple of weeks.
January 15th as well. Yeah.
Which is all right with me. I am looking forward to it.
Me too.
There was a recent interview with Bethany and Elizabeth Olsen, and they said, brace yourself for this.
Uh-huh.
It is unlike anything you've seen.
Fair.
You know what I hope they're going to say next? I hope that they're going to say that it's quite a ride.
You know what I bet they're going to say next?
What?
It's like a movie in 10 parts.
Oh, I hope they say that. I have a bingo
card. Can you imagine
though
if they did like a press thing where like it's exactly what you expect? It's what you've seen before because you like that. We've stopped trying and innovating. We're just doing it again.
It will look slightly different enough that you'll feel like you're seeing something new, but really it's the same old crap.
Coming soon from CBS.
we've got to find the killer. I don't want to find the killer. We're drafting you into the FBI. Can you do that? We can now. Let's use technology. All right. There you go. We've got a CBS show. I'm going to go pitch CBS.
I kind of like how like CBS is CBS, right? Like it's old people TV, realistically, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with it. That's what they get their viewers on. But like the CBS streaming stuff is where they're, you know, and I think they know their audiences.
Yeah.
Like they don't want to piss off their old audience that's still alive. Right. But their new audience is going to be able to use a computer, so we can put stuff there.
Exactly. And I mean, there has been some really good stuff on CBS All Access. The good like, when they, yeah, The Good Fight.
I mean, outside of one show.
Yeah, I mean, okay, The Good Fight, and I'm sure there must have been other stuff.
Well, I mean, there's Discovery.
Discovery.
That sounds like the one show, right? I'm like, because there was Picard, and right. That happened. There was The Twilight Zone, which wasn't great.
It was okay. I watched a couple of episodes, but I was like, all right, yeah, it'll do.
I mean, the problem is that competing with, like, Twilight Zone, like, trying to just be like, where's the new Twilight Zone, is just, I mean, look, when they've tried to reboot things like Tales from the Crypt, they had trouble matching the original.
Yeah.
Trying to match fucking Twilight Zone is just a losing fucking fight.
I know. It's one of those things that, like, even with Jordan Peele, it's like, sorry, dude.
All right, especially when you have shows now that are doing the same, like, you have things like Black Mirror, which I don't even like, but, like, they're at least doing the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, all you have when you do Twilight Zone now is the name.
Right. It's just the IP.
And it's even harder, because, again, like, if they had done something new, like Black Mirror or, you know, whatever they would have called the new Twilight Zone instead of Twilight Zone, like, you could do your own thing. The minute you invoke Twilight Zone, you are literally just up against some of the best TV ever done.
Yeah. That is absolutely true. And it's a high bar to climb.
Yeah.
But what else is on? Oh, of course, The Stand, I believe, is a CBS. I'm not sure if that's Peacock or CBS. We're talking good stuff. Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know what that's on either.
The Tan. I swear, like, I was joking with you and Frank
right.
The other day. But seriously, the opening like title just really looks like it goes from The Tan Stand. And I don't know who thought that was a good idea. Because it's
I don't
just
think
so
they
weird.
Thought about it.
I don't think they did either. If they'd done more of like a 90s era sort of morph and just smoothly like turned the into Stand.
There was some other show recently that did that too, though. That like had a terrible like title morph. That
I know.
I forget what it was. I just remember laughing really, really hard at it.
Yeah, I know. I can't remember either, but.
Yeah, don't do title morphs, people, because these days people pause shit.
That's right.
Like, that is the lesson, right? Like, title morphs were great before everyone was watching shit streaming and just used to pausing stuff and getting screenshots. Now, if you do a title morph, you're going to accidentally make something weird.
And maybe they just embraced it. They're like The Tan Stand. The Tan Stand.
Sure.
So
sure.
Welcome to The Tan Stand. Tans while you wait. You know, I don't know.
Anyway. But yeah, talking about CBS All Access, of course, there was a Discovery. There's the next to last episode of the season.
So I
think when we talked last, you hadn't watched 11 either.
No. I had not watched Sakaal. And I watched both. Actually, earlier today, I watched both episodes in a row. And,
which is good.
And I gotta say, there is a tide, which is the most recent one. I thought that was a gangbusters episode. I mean, that was just wonderful. Like just things. Right. It was just like everything was nice. All the stakes were defined, and people were doing stuff. And you know, you got Michael running around on board the Discovery. You've got the Discovery infiltrated. You've got the promise of a different characterization for Osira, like seeing hidden depths, but turns out, no, she's just as terrible as you think she is.
I don't know. No, I think we disagree on that.
Okay.
I gotta say, like, that whole scene is one of the best, like, I think that entire weird scene in 12 with her and the Admiral, whose name I can never remember, is one of the best things the show's ever done.
Oh, no, I agree. No, I totally agree with that. I mean, you do see that this is not just a cardboard villain, that it is somebody who has an actual point of view and wants something very unexpected. But like, as soon as he says, well, you have to be held accountable for your crimes, at that point, she's like, well, fuck no. Like, she's just never going to
of
see
course.
Him die.
Right, but I don't think it makes her as terrible as you think. Like, that's the thing. It's like, because originally you're just like, you know, well, the chain is just a gang of criminals. Fuck them.
Right.
And then you see, like, no, they've built up the society and all this, and she has these lofty goals towards building a society. But she is, yes, she is, you know, like a penny ante dictator in a lot of ways, and refuses to face the consequence for how she's built it. But she's also not just this big villain like you think she is.
No, that's true. She is more.
But there, I think, there is depth to it.
Yeah, but I think Stamets says kind of sums up her character. There is more to her, but also she's exactly what she seems to be.
That's fair. I love the entire, like, you know, doesn't taste bad for shit storyline, like, line.
That was good.
Just because it brings home in so many ways the Federation and, you know, their acceptance of post-capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's pretty good for shit, but also we didn't have to commit any atrocities.
Exactly. You have to eat your own shit if you're going to be ethical. Which I thought was a great little exchange as well.
It's something that I don't think they've ever really dealt with. Like, even when we had, like, Ferengi running around, we never really dealt with it in Star Trek.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the sort of the idea of post-capitalism has never been quite so baldly stated on Star Trek.
And I'll tell you, like, I had a weird moment, like, when that entire exchange started, and she was like, well, I want to do this thing. Of, like, oh god, is this where we see that, like, the new Federation falls down, and, you know, oh, Discovery's gonna have to, you know, pick it all up, and...
Right, well, I honestly thought that's what was going to happen.
Right, and the fact that it turns into, like, really nuanced diplomacy is just, damn it, this show knows how to work the Federation.
Yeah, exactly.
And bring it into the future in a whole new way, exactly. Right? Like, that's the thing.
And when he says you have to be held accountable, like, you see what the difference is between the Federation and other systems of government is that they have this, like, it's a commitment to justice, and you know damn well that admiral, if he had committed, like, atrocities, he'd be like, yeah, put me on trial.
Right, but that's the thing. It's like it's a small, and I think this is the heart of Star Trek. Right, is that something as simple as, oh no, we'll totally, like, you know, yeah, your 15-year plan is, it's doable, it makes sense, we should, you know, this is how we can actually get back into the galaxy and make things right. And you're, like, just getting a little nervous, and then he's, you know, but you have to be held accountable. It's like a weird, like, cheering fist pump moment, and it's such a, like, sort of almost boring political thing in a weird way.
Yeah, exactly.
But it also isn't. Like, it's the most meaningful thing ever. And, like, for me, that's Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where you get fist pump moments out of what should be boring political theater.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Instead of, like, a big, you know, like, firefight, right. the Star Trek thing always just turns on morality.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I think in so many ways, Discovery understands Star Trek better than Star Trek has been understood in decades.
I agree. And another thing I like about the way that scene played is that it could have played a bit more bluntly. Like, he would have said, yes, this is all great, right after your trial. What?
Right.
Your trial, don't you know? Oh, like that would be kind of a the creaky way. But when he says, you know, you have to be held accountable, it's not this, like, cultural assumption. He knows that she's not going to like that. And he knows what's at stake. So that.
Right.
Yeah.
And he phrases it in such a way, like, maybe it's still feasible. Like, he wants to believe in it.
Yeah, exactly.
He wants to give her this last chance to do this correctly, if that's what she wants.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he is presenting her the roadmap for, no, you can totally have the thing you want. You don't get everything. You know, you don't get away.
Right.
But you can have your dream. You just have to pay for it.
Exactly.
And he's willing to do that. And, like I said, like, that's stunning.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many shows that wouldn't do this.
Yeah. And a great moment for that character who beforehand would be, like, you don't really see him. Until, like, he seems, like, up until now, he's sort of mostly functioned as kind of a roadblock for Discovery crew.
He's the police captain, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, go do this thing or hand in your badge and your gun. Like, that's what he was set up to do.
Yeah.
And I love that, like, in the space of, like, one episode, I'm like, I kind of want to have, like, a mini series, even just following him. Like,
sure.
you know, he believes in the Federation. He's exactly what the Federation needs, and he is stuck in the worst time for the Federation. And it just, it casts an interesting light back across the season over all of his choices, where you're like, man, he's being kind of annoying. It's like, no, he has motive. Makes sense. Yeah, I just, love show.
I love the setup. I loved the setup early when they were sort of infiltrating all the systems on Discovery, and they're like, ah, there's this bit of code. It's Earth Entertainment. I'm like, fuck, that's the Sphere.
Uh-huh.
And then at the end, it's like, yep, hey, I'm the Sphere, Data. How can I help you? Let's take back this ship. I'm like, sweet.
Yeah, that
very
was
sweet.
And of course, the AV Club thing, just if you were curious. I didn't really like the episode. Liked it a little bit for bringing the complexity, but outright apparently laughed at the end bit.
I don't quite understand that.
I just thought it was just ridiculous. I'm like, dude. Again, it's Star Trek. Like, here's an entity that could have been the new Borg.
Sure.
But learning from and getting to know the Federation through the crew of Discovery has turned it, like, again, like the way the Admiral wants, turned it into a force for the Federation.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know. Also,
Stamets' breakdown was so perfect.
Ooh, yeah. Very nice. Mm. Jeez, yeah, that was harsh.
Yeah, like I am kind of almost curious why we haven't seen that kind of breakdown. I love that it's kind of lurking under a bunch of people's skins with the whole "we came to the future for you."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and this is how you repay me.
Yeah,
and it's funny. Like there are shows where characters are forced into that kind of impossible choice too often until it loses its power, and it's nice.
Sam, kind of, Dean.
Yeah, for example.
Sorry.
Although the one thing I always enjoyed about early Supernatural was the way in which they were always forced into making deals to save the people they loved, and it always got them in deeper. Like there was
right, they just, and they knew it.
Yeah, exactly. They were just like, oh fuck, oh damn it. Like there was no way out of this like horrible situation except to make it worse, which I always enjoyed.
Yeah.
And, I want to talk a little bit about the 100 as well in relation to this. We can do that after, because I finally finished it.
Well, we can go to it right now. I mean, there's not much else. Like, I think that next week we'll have way more to talk about with Discovery.
Yeah. I wanted to mention a little bit about the previous episode, Sokal.
Oh, yeah.
Because I really enjoyed parts of it. I enjoyed Tilly's hair changes. And I knew when you said that, like, one of the characters keeps on changing their hair, I kind of thought, well, who's got hair that can... Oh, fucking Tilly, of course.
Yeah, no, it was such a funny little continuity burp.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever. I mean, obviously, there were just cover shots, you know, and that...
Right. Yeah. Shit happens. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. I just thought that a lot of that one was... That was, like, the kind of Star Trek stuff that I don't much enjoy.
Okay.
It felt like a weaker episode in some ways, but sort of like this, I don't know, it's always like, come down to this planet. No, everything's funny because you're in a program where you're meeting God or what have you, and you've got this guy who's all scared. I was like, and it turns out the burn is caused by a scared, traumatic child. I'm like, okay.
It's pure Star Trek, though.
It is pure Star Trek. It's just not the part of Star Trek that I like, but that's all right. There are some parts. I thought the sort of the Kelpian monster was really great. I loved that whole. I love the way that looked. I thought things were interesting, but my plan was to actually start off this podcast by making a list of Star Trek plot holes. Like, they didn't even put Doug Jones in makeup. LOL. Did they forget?
Nice.
Nice, but I did like that they got to show Jones without the Kelpian makeup.
Yeah,
I knew this would happen eventually.
They had to.
Yeah, exactly. But that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. No, that was. I think the episode was very much classic Trek, like just in story and concept, and I kind of really like the idea that, you know, we've left this big thing, and that the next episode has to clean up all of it somehow. Or enough of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
you know, season four is going to be interesting. What they leave on the table for this?
Oh yeah, no, I'm looking forward. I'm really looking forward to seeing how they, you know, thread the needle of this season and what comes next.
Yeah.
I wonder
you want to talk about the 100 quickly though?
Yeah. I've been watching the 100 sort of on and off on Netflix for a while. And I just sort of held off on the final seventh season. And I will tell you this. If you ever decide to watch The 100 and you get to the end of season six, what you do is you say, well, guess that's done. There's no more. There are no more episodes to watch. Season seven doesn't exist. And then you walk away from you know, the computer.
Well, it's funny. You know, that there is a show I did that with.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Burn Notice, of all things.
Oh, yeah. Either
I really liked the first two seasons.
Yeah.
And the end of the second season is, it's a workable end for the show.
Mm-hmm.
It is. Like, there's nothing to be said there. And I was like, you know what? The show's already feeling thin to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that they're going to come back. Because, like, I'd been watching it, like, on DVD through, like, Netflix at the time. And I was like, I get that there's more seasons, but also, like, it's already starting to feel old.
Right.
And I'm like, I could keep watching, and maybe there'll be some good stuff there, or I could just walk away, like, content with, like, a good two-season show. I have never seen past season two.
You know, I think I started on season three, but it just... Yeah, it outstayed its welcome at that point.
So
good call. Yeah, there was really nothing, like, all the entertainment value had just drained out of it at that point.
Right, and I think actually it was finally this year that I finally watched the last three seasons of West Wing.
Oh, really?
Because I had done the same thing there when I was like, well, Sorkin's gone. Like, yeah. Fuck it. Like, I've never seen the last season of Gilmore Girls either.
Well... That's,
I'm just saying, like, sometimes I just draw a line in the sand. I'm like, nah, fuck it.
No, that's just, it's not bad, but it certainly lacks a lot of what made Gilmore Girls, because, you know, Amy Sherman-Palladino. Although, oddly enough, I felt like the watching Gilmore Girls Year in the Life often did not feel like Gilmore Girls either, quite often.
No, it's true. Like, I don't regret watching it, but I regret watching it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. I think Palladino's came back to it and just, they had old ideas, but sort of...
And they refused to change them.
Yeah, and everybody else had moved on, and so it just came off. It just no longer worked. And I think it actually, the only way it works is if you essentially behave as if season seven never happened.
Well, that's what she did for the show.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it worked for me because I'd never seen season seven, so I had nothing to wipe out.
There you go. Yeah. But anyway, The 100. Because what I always think of in The 100 is that one of the things they did really well in the early part of the show was they gave the main character, Clark, they always gave her impossible choices when there were absolutely no good outcomes. And so she would have to make the best possible worst choice. And it was usually heartbreaking because, in the early on in the second season, she gets to kill her boyfriend. Real Buffy moment. But of course, he doesn't come back as Angel does in Buffy. And like at the end of season two, she basically commits a genocide, which is,
you know, a little light genocide, never hurt anyone.
Just a little bit of genocide. But it's really it's really gripping because, I mean, there is no way for her and her sort of people to survive if she doesn't, you know, wipe out this faction, which includes all the innocents, all the children, et cetera, et cetera. And it happens, and it's just like, holy crap. But after season two, then you get, like, you know, her girlfriend getting killed and all that you could call that controversy. And they start running her through the same mill repeatedly. but it makes you get these diminishing returns. Mm. But in, I don't know how to put this, in season 7, they do something that is so bizarrely bad. It just beggars all belief. The other main character, arguably, is named Bellamy. He's actually the actress's husband in real life. And there's a point at which he's converted to this religion. And so he's become this sort of, you know, he's become part of the enemy. And he has this, like, book of sketches, like that somebody in the art department has drawn. And this book of sketches will provide some kind of key to unlock a thing that will, like, you know, possibly, you know, wipe out people. And so she has to stop him. And he's kind of, so she's got a gun on him, and he's kind of standing in a room with other people, with other sort of members of the cult. And he's holding this book of sketches, and she's like, he's just holding it. And she's like, Bellamy, don't make me do this. Don't make me do this. And he's like, and he sort of like, he makes to hand the book over to another person, and she shoots him, and then she runs out of the room into this portal. She doesn't even get the frickin' sketchbook, which was the point of having to shoot him. And then she's faced with like Bellamy's like girlfriend and Bellamy's sister, and she's like, I had to kill him. And then they hug her, and it's like, what is going on? Why did any of this shit happen? It was like one of the most bafflingly bad moments I've ever seen in a television show. Like, it was insane. And they kept on introducing new characters, like an entirely new conflicts in the last season. I'm like, you don't want to work on the actual characters you have, I guess. So.
No, well, it's a choice.
It's a choice. Yeah, it was. Yeah,
it's a choice.
It's just like, I mean, people complain about the Supernatural finale, but this is, I mean, that was a work of genius compared to this.
Nice.
It was amazing.
Oh, can I just say really quick, because I'm like right near the end of season 6 Supernatural. I had forgotten 95% of that season.
Really?
Like the entire like cast working with Crowley thing, completely forgot it.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, like I think it was that thing of like, it's actually a fun season. But it's just, it's one of those coming off of the highs of 4 and 5.
Yeah, it's hard to.
So I'm really excited now to watch like 7 and 8 and 9, like all the seasons I remember as being like, they're not great. To just kind of go like, no, there's actually good stuff in here. There's a lot of good stuff in here.
No, I think you're right. I mean, there is good stuff, but it's, I don't know.
It's lesser.
It's lesser. And it's kind of, I mean, I found a lot of Cass's storylines in those seasons to be unengaging. I'll put it
Well, I think it's partially because if you, like, assuming you know this, like the original plan for the end of season 5, right?
I've heard it, but I don't remember what it was. Mm.
So originally, that was going to be the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And they only added one scene, which is that little bit of Sam at the very end.
Right.
But they also changed one bit about midway through. Dean, you know, goes to, like, Cass comes back, and Dean's like, are you God? And, you know, Cass is like, you know, no, but thanks. Apparently, originally, he was supposed to say yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, originally, Cass was going to be God, and that was going to be the kind of the end of the show and the whole trick of it.
Hmm.
And I think that since they didn't do that, I mean, they eventually do, of course, do the Cass as God thing plot line, but in a weird way. And I think that they just spent a season or two not sure what to do with some of these characters because there was no roadmap.
Right.
And, you know, poor Sarah Gamble, who, you know, went on to do Magicians, just was trying to figure out how to, you know, steer this boat.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
So, it's always explained a lot of the cast stuff to me over the years. It's like, yeah, they had no idea how to keep the character around, but they really liked him.
Mm-hmm.
So they kept trying to figure out things to do.
Yeah, and you could tell. I mean, you could tell they were fishing for things and trying on different sort of ideas to see what worked the best.
Right.
And you know, I think the show would have suffered without, with, you know, if they'd gotten rid of Cass, for example.
Agreed.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine. It's funny that he shows up only like in season 4, because it's hard to imagine the show without him.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Anyway, away from Supernatural. There was an Expanse.
An Expanse. It's very expansive, this Expanse.
Jumping ahead in the episode a little bit, I gotta say, there was a moment where I actually did a, oh, holy shit. you have any personal bets on that moment?
I don't, actually.
So they finally escape, and I love the entire prison escape bit,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, that was just genius. And, you know, Amos's whole, like, I'm used to being on spaceships where you just do shit because otherwise you die.
Right.
Kind of comes into play. But they're up there and they're fighting Tiny. And
don't call him
like
that.
Everyone's losing and you know, Calista's like, her implants start to come back online. You think you know where this is going.
Right.
And then Amos just like grabs him and like suplexes him down a hole. I just went, holy shit. Like, it was,
oh my God. Yeah.
I was so not expecting it, but it's also in the moment so completely Amos. This might not work. I might go over with him, but you know what? In this like exact second, I should do.
Yeah.
Like, just
yeah, because I mean,
eat the motherfucker.
You're expecting Clarissa to like sort of leap up and you know,
right.
finish the job. Yeah, that was
yeah.
That
no,
was
but
pretty
Amos just going for the yeet. It's...
Yeah. Well, first he kicks him between the legs, and then
right.
just flips him with a yeah. That was
That flip
crap.
Was just, oh my God. I laughed so hard. Because, like, even though they shot it with one of these, he almost went down with him.
Yeah.
And, like, to me, that's the Amos plan right there, is the one that, it really probably shouldn't work. Oh, I love Amos so much.
Yeah, that was good. The one thing I couldn't help but wonder during the escape is like, where the hell are all the other prisoners?
Right?
Fuck them. Like, we're just
kidding. So much of the place like collapsed that you figure like most of them like they went through and they were just like, nope, they're fucked.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, just kind of for the economy of the story. I get it. Yeah.
And even if they weren't, the idea that, like, A, the guards were like, we don't want to let them out because we'll just be overrun, and Amos being perfectly okay with that kind of atrocity, because he just needs just enough to get him and the people he cares about out,
exactly.
The rest of it doesn't occur to him.
Yeah.
That feels right.
Yeah, precisely.
It's fucked up, but that feels right.
Yeah. No, Amos has kind of a bubble, right?
Yeah.
And anybody outside that bubble is like, whatever.
Does not exist.
Exactly. Yeah, but for those inside his bubble, he will murder you know as many people as he needs to.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Oh,
that was good. I mean, it wasn't quite episode 4, but that's
no, but it was still a great episode.
It was.
I also did like the mirroring of a message going out to be like. Don't do, like, you know, be careful. Here's the solution to a thing. And, you know, like an episode ago, it gets there like 10 seconds too late.
Right.
And this episode, it gets there like 1 second in time.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty good. Yeah. Yeah, I like the way they're handling Naomi aboard the ship. You know, giving her just a little bit too much free rein to start with, but they've clearly learned their lesson now.
Right, no, and the drummer stuff continues to be, fascinating.
Oh, I love the drummer stuff. Yeah, I'm curious as to what she's planning, because, I mean, on the one hand, we all know that Marco is screwed in the long
right.
run, but right now, he's kind of, like, he's thrown every belter into the same boat. Like,
uh-huh.
I mean... Yeah, I mean, and this is, he hasn't, it's funny, because, I mean, and I think he knows this beneath his rhetoric, he hasn't freed the belt. He's all sort of put the same target on their back, so they all have to fall
right.
in line under him.
But what I think he also doesn't realize is that, like, A, he now has, like, Holden and the Rocinante looking for him,
mm-hmm.
and B, he's just invited Drummer to a meeting, and if she finds out Naomi is there, this goes really badly for him.
Oh, yes.
Like, he is just like between a rock and like six hard places and doesn't know it yet.
Right. Exactly.
Because again, like, you know, God help him if Amos gets off Earth and finds out type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, that's the general blanket expanse thing. It's like, uh-oh, you've just threatened somebody Amos likes. Hope he's nowhere near you. But again, like, even if, you know, it's one of those things of like, well, we're just going to kill Naomi. And, you know, 6 months from now, Amos gets off Earth. Well, Marco's still dead. Like, that's... you learn to just assume that, like, eventually it might take years. Right. But eventually Amos will finish this.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like a, you know, like a fast...
He's what Terminators want to be.
Yeah, exactly. that's good. Yeah, and I really enjoyed the ending where with I want to say Amos or not Amos. Guy played by Cass Anbar.
Right, I always think it was Cass Anbar. I can't think of his fucking name now.
Alex Kamal. With Bobby and Alex it's no longer the Razorback. But like they're just like left drifting in space now, which
right.
Are they going to get into this one?
I had a really weird thought.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that Alex is going to get out of this one.
Yeah.
Because remember, we don't remember when he was fired. We don't know.
Right.
But he was fired at some point, and like if they didn't finish season 5 by then, chances are he doesn't make it out of the season. No. If he does, we're going to get a, like, and then he went back to his home planet and died. but when I was watching that entire, like, and again, like, for the Expanse, you know, having a lot of fun with their chase scenes with fast ships and all the weird, like, actual physics involved, I was like, you know what? Like, this looks like, and it's silly, but do you remember when there was a video game called Afterburner back in, like, the 80s?
Mm-hmm.
And if you went to a good arcade, there was, like, an Afterburner machine. It was, like, a F-14 simulator off of, you know, Top Gun, basically. You could sit in the thing, and it would move around.
Yeah, I remember that very clearly.
Yes. But it would only move, like, you know, it would only pitch along one axis.
Mm-hmm.
I actually kind of broke a machine. Like, it shut down because I did a roll, which the game could do, but it wasn't supposed to. And so the thing wasn't allowed to move in that axis, and because it was this weird glitch in the game you could take advantage of, the entire thing just shut down. But I was like, this would be the best fucking video game. Like, sitting in those chairs that move in every direction freely while the room around you.
Oh, yeah.
I was just like, I want to play this video game.
I did think that they probably could have used, in that sequence, a few more, like, exterior shots of their ship trying to avoid the torpedo, because it really did seem like at points where they were just like, oh, swing this way, we swing that way.
Sure, but like there was no way to do it because the torpedo was just kind of going straight. They were just slowly moving out of the zone where it had lock.
Yeah,
there's nothing to show really.
I know that's
because they do space right, but I think like just on the map that constant like, okay, we're just out of the range of nope, we're fucked. Okay, we're just out of the nope. Like, that worked for me as a tension build for the show.
Right.
And it's just, I think it's just because it used the language of the show to do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
If they hadn't spent a few years building that language, it would have been a little staid, you know?
Yeah.
So.
I agree.
Anyway.
Yeah, I am in agreement. Yeah, no, it was a damn good episode. And my only real gripe with it is that I watched it on Wednesday right away. So now I had.
Well, see, I did what you did this time. It's like I was like, oh, I have to watch it. Oh, I need to watch that. And I kept getting distracted by like other stuff, frankly, mm-hmm. and just, you know, not having my head on straight. So I didn't watch it till last night. So now I only have to wait till Wednesday.
Right. Cool. Well, you were probably trying to watch it, but your 9-year-old daughter probably chopped off her hand with a paper cutter, and you're like, ooh, it's a teaching moment. And then you gave her some thread and needles.
Didn't we start with this? Didn't we?
I thought I would. This is the payoff.
You're bringing it back?
Yeah, I'm bringing it back.
Is that a teaching moment?
This is how to build drama and tension, kids, in a podcast.
And yelling cats. Hi, pants.
Oh, yes. Oh. I don't know where my yelling cat is. I think Alan has him sort of pinned like a... closed off somewhere. So we,
gotcha.
So we can podcast in peace.
Woo. So what else happened this week?
I don't. Oh, I did my regular rewatch of My Dinner with Andre.
Now, did you watch the special edition My Dinner with Andre the Giant, or did you watch the traditional version?
I watched the original cut.
Okay.
Yeah. I know you're referring to My Dinner with Andre Part 4, A New Hope, with Andre the Giant subbed in, but no, that was not the one I watched.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't know how to process how fucking bizarre that would be. I'm just picturing like Andre Gregory's like insane stories about running around in a Polish forest, or like going to like some weird Scottish retreat or whatever else, but all done with Andre the Giant's voice. And he would rhyme, of course, because, you know.
Of course. Because why not?
Yes. That would be. And I mean, paired with Wallace Shawn, that's another. Holy shit.
Uh-huh.
That's oh my God. Okay.
I was like, you just got there, did you?
I just got there. My brain just put it all together.
Uh-huh.
Oh man. This is a weird. This is a really weird, very specific SNL skit that never got made.
Sadly, I think you're right.
Yeah, but maybe it did get made somewhere. I don't.
I require watching Saturday Night Live.
That's exactly it. But yeah, it's like I say. I had a purpose in watching this one.
Okay.
Because as you know, and maybe some of our listeners, like Frank, would know, I'm currently involved in writing that supernatural audio drama.
And just to be clear, it's an audio drama that has the supernatural, not a audio drama that involves the show Supernatural.
Correct. Yes, we're calling it a supernatural screwball noir.
This is my dream.
Anyway, so I came up with my pitch for an episode that I'm writing. It's called Infinite Breadsticks. Main character Valentine takes his sort of his partner. His business partner, Threadripper, a pixie, to her favorite restaurant for her birthday, which turns out to be Olive Garden. And once they're there, they get stuck in this infinite loop where they just keep on having to order the breadsticks over and over again.
Sure.
So, yeah, sure. And
I like this already.
Yeah, cool. And anyway, so I'm using My Dinner with Andre as sort of a frame for this. So it's a way that lets me actually begin to write by having sort of a model to go after.
Yeah, makes sense.
But I thought, hey, I'm going to watch My Dinner with Andre. And I have to tell you, like every couple of years, I go back and watch My Dinner with Andre. And every time I have a different experience.
Huh.
Because it's just one of those films where the things they, because it really is, it's two guys talking for like almost 2 hours. That's pretty much it. But one thing I didn't really, I don't know why I never quite noticed this before, is that it goes from like being sort of this contemplative piece to being this absolutely batshit crazy thing in like 30 seconds. Because you get Wallace Shawn as himself, or as a character like himself, you know, saying, oh, you know, I'm just on my way. I've got bills to pay, you know, and I found myself, you know, in these circumstances where I'm going for dinner with this, you know, old friend of mine that I've been avoiding for quite some time. You know, he disappeared, dropped out of the theater world, and, you know, I heard weird things about him. And then he goes to this restaurant, this sort of like fancy French restaurant, and then they sit down and Andre Gregory begins to talk. And within almost no time flat, his stories are so fucking strange.
Mm.
Like they just, I'm like, how does anybody have these experiences? And here's the thing, like all these weird experiences, like running around in the Polish forest with, he wanted 40 Jewish women who didn't speak English to like have like a happening essentially in the in a Polish forest. And then he talks about like going to this place in Scotland called Findhorn, where you know they negotiate with the insects for their crops, and you know manage to like build a make a building by someone who's never designed a building before, but they keep the roof down by the energy of some beach stones because they want the building to be able to fly up to meet the UFOs. And
Right.
he talks about like having hallucinations and visions, and so on and so forth. And it's like it feels like something, because I remember like watching it years ago, and then years, you know, again and again, and all these sort of visionary stories seemed fascinating. But either it's because maybe I'm older now, or maybe we live in a depressingly literal time. These things sound so crazy. Like I kept on putting myself in the position of somebody who was trying to persuade somebody who'd never seen My Dinner with Andre before to sort of accept it. And I thought, I don't think a lot of people could come into this movie cold now, because it would just be so bizarre so quickly.
That's fair.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, so I'm watching it and I'm kind of like grudging and skeptical, and then after like an hour of Gregory talking, Wallace Shawn says, "You know, do you want to hear my honest reaction to all this?" And basically just says, "You know, I'm skeptical that any of what you're saying is true, and come on, you want like this sort of like, you know, revolution in consciousness, but I like to get up in the morning. My coffee is waiting for me, and there's my girlfriend, and we spend the day together. You know, and maybe I write a play that day, maybe I don't, but how can you want more than these like simple pleasures? Like,
Right.
you know, can you say we're really stuck in this totalitarian sort of like capitalist world order? I mean, this is the kind of thing that people are saying now. You know, if there are these pleasures available to us, and I'm like, oh. Okay, you've literally answered my question, that and I never noticed that this question had been answered, because I think I was younger and I didn't have the same sort of resistance to the visionary and the crazy, or the visionary and the revolutionary that Andre Gregory
Right.
is sort of, you know, putting forth. At the same time, it's like, you guys have money. Like, what are you talking about? You guys have plenty of money. You're basically able to pay for a fancy French restaurant meal, and I watched a little piece afterward that Noah Baumbach had made, where he interviewed Gregory and Sean in 2009 about the movie, about the making of the movie. And
Right.
Gregory says, "Yeah, that's the one thing we didn't really grapple with, or that's never really addressed, is that we're not hurting." Like we're just fine. Like we're both sort of like upper middle class cosmopolitan people talking about how terrible the world is, but we don't really suffer. But not in the way that, you know, others suffer. But the other thing is they talk about the waiter. And the waiter is my favorite character in the movie. And all he is, and it's just that he's this really rickety old guy with this gigantic shock of white hair,
Right.
who's always sort of like almost like a like one like a David Lynch character, kind of like shuffling along, and like smoking cigarettes as you know as he's sort of waiting for things to happen,
Yeah.
and it turns out, like I thought, there's no way they have a story about the waiter, but they do. He's
Nice.
like a film archivist in like in the basement of MoMA they found him, and
Huh.
he was a European immigrant who worked in film distribution and loved film, but had never been on a movie set in his life. Or ever like been part of an actual film being made before in his life, and they were able to sort of get him. And apparently, the director Louis Malle wanted him fired immediately because he didn't know how to be a waiter. So they had to teach him how to like be a convincing waiter in order to,
That's kind of
yeah.
hysterical.
And it was great. And apparently, he had some level of sort of after the movie came out, he gained some level of like sort of film circle celebrity and was able to do lectures and so on.
Huh.
But here's the thing. Sorry, I know I'm going on a lot about this.
No, please. It's fascinating.
Well, this is what really fascinated me is that when I had always watched this and I'd never really wondered. I'm like, are they like all these like crazy ass stories that Andre Gregory is talking about? are like any of them true? Like, are they actual stories that he would tell and they just put it in the movie? Or did they just, you know, or did he and Sean sit down and they just kind of wrote it, like made it all up? And it turns out that Sean built the script out of these crazy stories that Andre Gregory would tell. So like, all these stories about him sort of like having visions and like having group happenings and like levitating a building and shit, it's all stuff that Gregory believed, and, you know, and would tell him. And I thought, well, that's, well, this is very strange. And so they, when they interviewed, when Noah Baumbach interviewed him in 2009, you know, Gregory is much older at this point, you know, he's, you know, 20 years on, and he's quite, you know, he's an old man. And I thought, and Noah Baumbach said, so how did you get Louis Malle to direct? And I thought, I wonder if it's going to be like a short, succinct thing. And then Gregory says, well, you know, it's the funniest story. Years ago, I was in Paris, and I met Pierre Cardin, the designer, and he made this suit for me that looked just terrible. It made me look like a transsexual vampire. I'm quoting Gregory here. And then he has this whole story about the suit, and I'm like, holy shit, this is exactly Andre Gregory. He can't tell crazy involved stories that are compelling anyway. And then it turns out he had this, he met with a photographer years later in like around 1980, you know, and said, hey, yeah, I've got this bizarre suit. Do you want to see it? She's like, oh, you have to like shoot, you know, you have to let me shoot you with the suit on. And then she did the shoot. And then Louis Malle was in town. He saw the photographs and phoned him up. And somehow also Wallace Shawn had shown up with a script during that shoot. And then so Louis Malle got a hold of these photos and the script and phoned him up and said, I want to do this movie.
Nice.
So it's one of these things where, like, you've got somebody
everything kind of just worked.
Everything kind of worked. I mean, and he tells it in such a way that it all sort of, like,
of
comes
course
together, right? But, I mean, this is the essence of a storyteller. And you see what Gregory is. He's this great raconteur, possible bullshit artist, but fascinating to listen to. So... anyway, so that's
nice.
So watching My Dinner with Andre was it was a whole different experience, and I was like, yesterday was like a better day for it.
That's always great. Like, there's there are a couple books like that for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every time I read them, I have a different experience. I take something different away from them just because they have I don't know. They have a thing, right? Like, whatever it is, they have a point of view that just changes depending on how you approach it.
Mm-hmm.
And as you
grow, and like you come back to it, you're kind of a different person, and it has different things to say to you.
Yes. And I always like stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. No, that's I have books like that too. I remember I used to read Lord of the Rings repeatedly as a kid because it seemed to change as I grew older.
That's fair.
Yeah, and I'm probably sure as hell I'm not going to read Lord of the Rings now. But
sure. For me, one of them is probably the biggest one is Little Big.
Oh my God! Yes.
Like, just every time I read that book, it's a different book.
Mm-hmm.
So, I kind of enjoy that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I find, actually, I mean, I don't know about you, but I also get that with, you know, like with some David Foster Wallace stuff that I reread later on. And I get I have a different relationship to the work and a different understanding of David Foster Wallace, like as a person as well as, you know, as well as a writer. I find his sort of, there's sort of different sort of like things I get from it.
Sure.
Although I don't know when I'm going to, the next time I'm going to read any David Foster Wallace.
That's fair.
Yeah. Probably maybe in a couple of years I'll crack Infinite Jest again or something.
But I do love books like that, you know, that just books or movies or whatever that just kind of change based on where you are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I have any movies like that personally. Like, just off the top of my head, I can't think of any.
Yeah.
That really changed me based on life. Maybe that says more about me and the movies I watch. I don't know. Like the last time I came to Crank.
I had a whole different perspective on Jason Statham's predicament. I think the thing that helps with that with My Dinner with Andre is that, I mean, it is practically just like a written text because there's so many words, right?
Yeah.
And it's all just story after story. And she said something really fascinating in the interview when Louis Malle, something that Louis Malle said. He said, when we make this movie, we're not going to see any of the things you're talking about. But by the telling of the story, we're going to go there. Like, we're going to go to the Sahara just by listening to you. We're going to go to Scotland. We're going to go to the Polish forest. This movie is going to go all around the world and be epic. But it's just going to be, but there will be no, the camera will never leave the restaurant. And it's kind of true.
Yeah?
Yeah. Also, we told him he couldn't eat. Because it looked
right.
They
just
shot
so
at me
endless.
Eating, and it was just like, yeah. And it's just like, no, you can't eat. You can order food, but don't eat it and talk at the same time. But yeah. Anyways, yeah. It was great.
Anyway, well, we are hitting the hour mark.
Yes, we are.
So we should probably wrap this up and do it again next weekend.
Yep, as we do.
As we do, with a new intro, hopefully. But for now, we'll play some music.
Yes.
Woo!